This is Book Public from Texas Public Radio. I'm Yvette Benavides. On this episode, I speak with Erica Krause about her story collection, Save Me, Stranger. There's something about the stories in Erica Krause's latest collection, Save Me, Stranger. When you read a story from this book, you expect to encounter characters facing a conflict. That conflict is the essence of the story. In Erica Krause's stories, the characters are in extraordinary settings, like the coldest town on the planet. They are in unusual situations. A piano salesman who tries to sell a totally unsellable piano. They experience things that mark their lives forever. A shooting at a convenience store. A stay at a haunted bed and breakfast. But nothing here reads as strange, not as in surreal or implausible ways. Life is weird. We really do try to survive in a world that puts us in situations that are beyond our control and sometimes even beyond our own imagination. So how do we live, fall in love, make a living, have any modicum of hope, find our way through this reality, and survive it? Erica Krause offers us visceral, haunting, achingly beautiful stories for the journey. I spoke to author Erica Krause about her story collection, Save Me, Stranger. So I have a lot of questions about structure and organization, as you might expect, about a story collection, just because I love story collections, my favorite thing to read in the world.
Really?
Even though I love everything, but I love story collections.
Oh,
do you too?
Wonderful. Oh, yes. I love story collections. I love individual short stories. And I love novels and memoirs and poems and all the other things, too. But I think story collections are pretty different. They're kind of like a wild beast that no one's managed to tame ever.
Yes, that's so true. And, you know, and I hear people out there say, oh, I only love novels. And I always think they're missing a point about, I mean, I love novels too, but I want people to sort of understand what the short story can do because right. It can do so much. But with Save Me, Stranger, what is the guiding principle for you in putting it together, in writing the stories or pulling the stories together? What was it for you? Was there something kind of guiding you as you worked on the collection?
Yeah, I actually had no intentions of writing a short story collection again, but and I wasn't writing short stories. I can't really write short stories when I'm working on a longer work, like a novel or a memoir. But I had finished a novel and I was going to try another one. But then a friend of mine died by suicide. And it was very unexpected. He was part of my writing community and I was supposed to meet with him the next day. So it felt like this total shock for me. And I also felt a sense of responsibility. I think the way many of us do, like maybe if I had said something, even random, it might have changed things. Maybe it would have made him go a different way or do a different thing. And of course that's kind of ridiculous because there were much more impactful people on his life, like his, you know, his wife and his kids, etc. So, but I was left with that feeling. So in this weird mad rush of grief, I wrote one of the stories in the collection. But then I kind of got obsessed with the question, like, can we save each other? Is that possible? Is there such a thing as rescue? Is there, what's it like to be saved? Does everyone deserve saving? And I got very interested in the idea, and that kind of pulled me through from idea to idea. And I felt like I was kind of monkey barring my way through the logical stream, trying to find an answer and zigzagging around. And by the end, I don't feel like I have the answer, but I do feel like I have a way better understanding of the question.
Oh, I love that. You mentioned the idea of saving someone, Save Me, Stranger. There's so much with the title of the book. There is a story called Save Me, Stranger in the collection, but I've really been thinking about this as something that names the book. Your stories explore real world problems, even, for example, something like gun violence that we know about all too well in the United States, but then also other subjects like privation, people who live with limited opportunities, as in North of Dodge, for example.
Right.
So I wonder if you can talk about, and that's just two out of, you know, so many other things I could mention. I wonder if you can talk about how you interrogate these topics through your storytelling. I feel like maybe you answered it for Save Me, Stranger, in a way, but I wonder if you can talk about that. Does that help? Is there some connection that you're making there?
Yeah, I think with each story, I tried to come at the question in a different way. And for example, in North of Dodge, there's a teenage runaway who's driving an ice cream truck through Omaha gang lanes. And you know, honestly, when I was that age, that's what I did for very briefly. And she ran into, and she basically begins this kind of friendship with these two children who are vastly neglected. And that's actually based on true experiences for me when I was living in Omaha briefly for summer. And there were these two kids that were severely neglected that would come to my window and threaten me with all sorts of things, and I would write it down. And so a lot of that is actually direct dialogue, believe it or not. And but it always bothered me that I never really helped them. You know, I just stole their words and, you know, thought they were funny and also scary at the same time. And then went back to college after that summer, but never forgot them. So, I think stories can, for the writer, they can sometimes solve a problem that you've never solved in your life. You know, for me, like, I never helped those kids. I never did anything for them, you know. In the story, I can change that. I can do something different. I can make a different choice. And I changed a lot of other things in that story. Not everything's true. I don't want anyone reading that and be like, wow.
Wow, Erica Krause.
Yeah, geez.
I love that story. I love that story. Yeah. I love that their little heads are in the window and, you know, she's trying to write things down and they're so innocent and they're trying to be tough and, you know, and oh, it's just, it's an amazing story. And they live in a place that's very dangerous.
With no supervision.
With no supervision, yeah.
Parental help or anything. I mean, that's like, and kids that, you know, in that story, they're 6 and 10, but they're not 6 and 10. They're like 16 and 20, like emotionally, you know? So so you have to grow up in different ways. And, you know, other ways I really like that stranger idea as well. Like, you know, it's one thing to try and, you know, save or rescue or be there for someone that you have an emotional investment with. But what about when it's someone you don't even know? So it makes me, I keep asking the question, like, what do we owe each other? What do I as a human being owe you as a human being, even though we've never met? And where are the lines there? Because, you know, some people are black holes of need and you can get sucked into that. How do you preserve yourself and help others at the same time?
You know, you mentioned this idea of stranger, and it is like how we're all on this planet together. For example, in the story North of Dodge, I mean, these children, they're strangers to this main character, and we all sort of, in this universe that you've created, they sort of comport themselves in ways where they seem, people want to connect in some way. Somebody asked me, here in the newsroom, I was, you know, because I carry your book around.
Thank you. You're like a billboard for me. I should pay you.
And everybody wants to know, you know, and the cover is striking and the title is striking. But he's a guy from Nebraska. So I said to him, hey, there's a story set in Nebraska. And so he wanted to know all about that story. And he said, what is the book about? What are the stories about? And I started to explain the first story. And then sort of summarize the next one. And he was really listening. And I said, you know, they're stories. So they're characters like Frank O'Connor's idea of characters in short stories where it's just all of us. They're just like all of us. They lose at things. They're looking for things. They're on the hunt for things. They don't know what's missing. But they're plunked down in these extraordinary, strange situations. So I love playing with this word strange and stranger. Mm-hmm. For example, in the first story, we're in like the coldest place. I had to like put on a sweater every time I've read this story.
I feel frozen. I've never read about that place. It's so fascinating to me. The coldest town on earth.
The coldest place. And then you have these other, and it's not that they're implausible, fantastical situations that these characters are in. You're capturing a moment, like the piano salesman who's, mm-hmm. you know, trying to sell his pianos, and he takes this customer to the back room, and I don't want to say too much more, but it's like this extraordinary thing.
An unsellable piano.
Oh, my gosh.
That's perfect.
So I love the idea of strangeness as maybe connected to the mystery of human beings, right? This is what I love about short stories is that, as you said, we find more questions than answers, but we remain mysteries to each other. And I feel like that's such a connection. And we're always sort of grappling with solving the mysteries, but we never really will. And so we just keep reading. We just keep reading the stories.
I also like the, I wanted to play with that idea of different people from different places. You know, if you, for example, I used to live in Japan and I was the stranger in Japan, right? And people were, you know, there were customs that were strange to me, right? But at the core, everybody's dealing with the same heartbreak and the same sadness and grief or loss or whatever they're dealing with, right? Or joy sometimes, right? So I wanted to set the book in lots and lots of different places to sort of show and different situations that you would only find in those places, mm-hmm. you know, like the situations in Oymyakon, Siberia are very different from the ones in a Tokyo suburb or you know, Bangkok or wherever. So yeah. I wanted to show how we're impacted by these strange situations, but in ways that we can relate to. You know, I wanted that to come through too. That like, oh well, I might, you know, in this situation where there's this bad choice or that bad choice, I might make a similar choice too when there are no good when there are no good ones.
I see, and this is another thing about playing with this word stranger for me. All of the different places, and I know you've lived in different places, and I picked up on this idea about Tokyo and Nebraska and Colorado and all of these places, and the you know, the pole of cold, the coldest place ever. and I kept wondering about this idea, but yes, they all seem to, as you say, they're all in different places. And you know, there's a fish out of water quality too that I'm drawn to, even in Pole of Cold, where Theo is a fish out of water, and we're sort of looking at this space and the story through his eyes, and mm-hmm. kind of, you know, falling in love too. And it's so cold there that his clothes fall apart when he's standing outside, right? And it's just like, how cold is it? And yet, you know, when I've read that story and come to that part where his clothes are just like dissolving, they're just falling apart. It's so cold. He's still sort of standing there, and we're still sort of standing there with him, and you know, making goo-goo eyes and trying to, you know, eat the non-planned things, that, you know, the things that he has to eat. So,
the, like brains and yeah. blood.
The blood and I don't know. I love the idea of strangeness, strangers, and the truth. You know, the truth is stranger than fiction, and I always feel like short stories tell the truest truths. And so we can handle strangeness as a very, very acceptable, expected, real kind of thing.
Do you like it to travel for yourself and go to places where you don't, where you're adrift?
I do. Do you like that? Yeah. I do like sort of not knowing anyone. And mm-hmm. and I've experienced I have not traveled very much, but what I've experienced, and I started traveling very much later in my life, I said to somebody, I've experienced the most extraordinary things in other cities, and I did that entirely alone, but alongside other people, other right. strangers, like conferences, you know, it's sort
right,
of like
right.
everybody's sort of a stranger to me, but we're all sort of experiencing this new place together. Right. So that kind of thing, yeah.
I think writers and readers tend to be on the outside a little bit, you know. If you were on the inside, you'd be the one that people were writing about, maybe, you know, or you'd be, you wouldn't have the, maybe even the drive to read. But I think more introspective people, more introverted people tend to write, tend to read, tend to try and understand life through stories mm-hmm. rather than by going and watching a football game, maybe, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, drinking beer with the guys or something like that. I think it's an attraction to a more condensed version of life, which is what any piece of writing is, but especially a short story. And short stories, I feel like you get to learn so much about human nature and people and life and different places in very short bursts. It doesn't take very long to read a short story, right? So you can sort of embrace worlds, many worlds across a collection very quickly in a way that, you know, novels are great too, and they have their own benefits as well, but there's more time investment with that one. You live the novel for at least a couple days, right? Maybe mm-hmm. more, and then you leave it, right? Short stories are weird. They're like sort of attacks in the night or something. They're just very fast, you know. And then there's this sort of world that is dumped on you as a reader, and then what do you do with that is the question.
Well, you've published a memoir called mm-hmm. Tell Me Everything. It's a memoir, and it's also part true crime. Another title I love and another cover I love. But I was wondering, what did writing that book, or even promoting it, I'm wondering about that particular book, having it out in the world, contribute to this experience of writing short stories? I wonder if anything.
Yeah, so I sold that book as on proposal as part of a two-book deal with Save Me Stranger. So Save Me Stranger was done first. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't even written Tell Me Everything. I'd written one chapter. Wow. But it's such a difficult topic that I was like, I'm really not going to do this unless I have a deal up front, because I don't want to go through all this heartbreak. And then, because it's the story's about my experience as a private investigator working on the first ever Title IX sexual assault case amidst my own history with sexual violence. So such a difficult topic.
Yeah.
I needed that incentive, and for me that incentive was, first of all, knowing that there was that it was going to have covers, and the other one is knowing that my short story collection would be published, because it's very hard to publish a collection. Most publishing houses, they don't want them at all. And in fact, when we were selling the two book deal, there were publishers who were like, tell you what, we'll take the memoir and not the collection, and we'll pay you more.
Oh my gosh.
And I said, no, I really, really want this collection published. And then they said, well, then we don't want either one, you know? So we lost deals over it, which is kind of funny. That's how maligned and underdoggy the poor short story is. So I wrote the book, I wrote the memoir, and during that time, every book that you write, it teaches you to become a better writer. And also the world changes. So during that time, we went through such huge global and national changes, you know, Trump's first election, the pandemic, and Roe v. Wade was overturned, and all these things that made about a third of the stories in the collection that I thought was done, they made the stories either irrelevant or horribly dated. Mm-hmm. So I had to say, wait a second, I can't move forward with it as is. I need to change something. So I ripped out a third of the stories. One I was able to revise, but the others, I just had to write a whole bunch more stories to replace them, because I was like, this is a different time, you know. And I'm really, really, really glad I did, because I wrote some stories that I feel connected to, and I'm proud of them, and I like them. And it makes me feel that the book is now. I always feel like whenever you publish any book, it's a little bit like a prom picture. You know, at that moment, you looked as good as you could look, but time goes by and you look back and you're like, oh my God, that dress and that hair. And that's how I feel with an older book. So being able to bring this up to date, I feel like I have just a few more years leeway on that horrible feeling of being like, what have I done?
Oh, no. I think it's a perfect book for now, but I can see that I'll be rereading it down the road too. So, but what is it? Why? I've asked this question of so many writers. Why is the short story collection so, as you said, maligned? Why doesn't any, when, you know, there was a time when that wasn't the case, as we know, but what happens? Is the idea that they can sell a novel or a longer work, I guess?
I think, well, the book industry for a long time has been sort of driven by the film industry. And now the film and TV industry. So if it's a book, there was the idea that this can turn into a movie, or, you know, and then now a book is actually the perfect size for a TV series, which is longer than a movie, right? I always felt like a novella fit actual movie.
Oh, yes.
Size a little bit better, just because, you know, but short stories don't really fit in that so much, right? Short stories a little too short for any of those things. So with that kind of commerce in mind, it doesn't make sense for a lot of the bigger publishers to publish a short story collection, because they're probably not going to get that boost from film that's going to make people read the book. You know, readers go down. I mean, I love that you read. I read somewhere that the average American reads one book a year, and it's a romance.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's sort of the industry that we're looking at. And, to put out a book of short stories in that sphere is it's a harder sell to justify that to a publisher, especially if you're not some big celebrity writer or something. But I hear from so many people, oh my God, I'm so glad that you're publishing, you know, I hear this from writers, you're publishing a book of short stories, there aren't enough of them, I wish there were more. So I think writers like them. And sometimes readers who are not writers like them. But I think most people don't even know what they are, you know? Yeah. They've never seen a collection of short stories, maybe, or never read one.
That's wild. I hate when I hear somebody say something like, well, write a short story as practice for the novel, as a warm-up. And I'm thinking, what? No. It's an apple and an orange. No.
You're right. So. They're very different to write. It's as different as writing a poem and an essay. You know, they're related, but they're totally different, because short stories are by nature experimental. They don't have to hold weight. They can be pretty free. So you can do a lot of different weird things with a short story that you can't do with a novel or a memoir, because you have to keep your reader reading through that difficult middle section. You know, that there's always like 100 pages that it's a danger zone where people are going to maybe put it down and not come back to it. With a short story, you know, it's a blip. It's over pretty fast. Yeah. The reading experience, you know, you can read it on a subway ride, or, you know, some people take them into the bathroom, but you know, that's really how long it takes. So there's an ease to them, and but there's also a problem, and that every time you finish a short story, you get this little dopamine hit of like, here's my ending. And then every time you get that relief, you can walk away from the book, right?
Yeah.
So that's an issue that novels and memoirs don't necessarily have, but you have to manage that with a collection. You have to find a way to make them interested enough to read that next story rather than just being satisfied with what they've read so far.
Yeah. Huh. It's so interesting, like the psychology of it almost. I think it was Mavis Gallant said something about when you read a short story, you sort of have to close the book and sit with it and not just run to read the next one in the book, the very next one. And, you know, and as if it's a race to finish the collection. So, yeah, I like this idea of sitting with it, but coming back to the next one. One thing I know about you is that you're a teacher too, and you teach a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot.
And you you must love it. You must.
I do.
Absolutely I do. Love it.
I really do.
I've heard people who teach say, oh, you know, teaching just wrecked my writing life. Mm-hmm. Or words to that effect. But what does teaching do for you, for your writing life?
Well, I'm really lucky with regard to where I teach. I've heard the same thing, like, oh, I wrote nothing while I was teaching, from people who teach at maybe in a university or secondary school or et cetera, primary school. But I teach at a nonprofit called Lighthouse Writers Workshop in Denver. And it's a kind of, it's a like a literary arts cultural center, right? Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of classes. And I have a lot of freedom as far as my teaching load. I teach in a 2-year book writing program that's cohort based. So I have 2 years of cohorts of 6 people each. And that's wonderful. But I only meet with them once a month, you know. I do work for them uh-huh. in the middle, but it's lighter than meeting with someone five days a week or 3 days a week, right? Yeah. And then I also teach maybe like a weekly class with Lighthouse or two sometimes. And so I do have a lighter teaching load in general. Now, again, I also don't have health insurance, so that's, it's contract work. So there's that. I think if I taught more, I would probably experience what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But I also, I also do client work. And again, that's more limited time than something where like I'm commuting to work every day. You know, I think jobs in general do interfere with writing. It's just time, time takes away from what you're doing. But I do think it's very, very important to teach writing if you like it, if you enjoy it at all, which I really, really do, because it helps you understand literature more. I studied literature in college and in graduate school. But then after that, if you don't have some way to stay in the conversation, just writing is not enough. I think you need to understand, like, oh, they're doing that thing, and that's something I can teach to my students in this way when I'm illustrating this technique or this idea. That's kept me on my toes more, and it's helped me become, I know it's helped me become a much, much better writer. So, and also just to be surrounded by other writers all the time is great. You get to a place where you think like, oh, that's normal. Everyone's a writer. That's how people are. They write books, but then I kind of step away from it for a little while and I'm like, oh, that's right. Most people do not do this. Most people think this is actually kind of weird. So I need reality checks, but teaching, I'm very careful about my teaching because mm-hmm. you have a lot of influence over a writer when you're teaching them about writing, because this is, as important as writing is to me, that's as important as it is to them. This is their special thing, and you can mess that up for them so easily. So yeah. So you have to be very, very conscientious, but you also have to give them things they can use. So I find it a huge intellectual challenge working with students and clients and client writers mm-hmm. On a one-on-one or in a small group basis to help them get over whatever blockages they have to take their writing to the next level. And I've seen the results. Some of my students have gotten books published and big book deals I can't get, frankly. So that's incredibly gratifying to see them take off. And I can't take, I wish I could take full credit for that. That's most of the time those students, they're incredibly dedicated and hardworking and they just, whatever they get, they're able to use. But it's fun to have a hand in it, and to see it firsthand. I think writing is very solitary in some ways, but it's also community oriented. Unless you are involved in a writing and reading community, you're just scribbling on pages and it's making little marks, So that community conversation is the whole thing, really. It's what it's all about. So I feel lucky to be part of it, because I know a lot of people who are very isolated in their writing. So I feel fortunate to live where I live, be part of the Lighthouse community, and be part of my a community of writers that I can call up and moan to.
And I like this idea about some people who are writers, they embrace mm-hmm. the whole idea of solitude. But yes, at a certain point, I do feel I agree with you that a community of writers can really make a difference.
I think of, there's some writers I think of like Ralph Ellison or writers who isolated themselves during a project because they had sort of achieved such literary celebrity that it was hard for them to find people they could share their work with. And I don't feel like it made the writing better. I feel like it led to blockages and isolation. I mean, when we're writing about other people usually, you know, we're writing about relationships and interactions, et cetera. So it doesn't, you need to be isolated so you can focus and concentrate on the work, but total isolation, I think, keeps you out of touch with not just the writing world, but also your project, whatever you're working on.
What is your process? Because you're very, very busy, but you're writing and publishing. Do you write every day? Are you always sort of taking down notes and scribbling in a notebook? And
you know, I know writers who really thrive off of that, write every day. You know, they'll get up at 4 in the morning and write every day until 6 or 8 or whatever. Whereas I never do anything the same 2 days in a row. I hate that. If I have to even make the same drive, I'll start to notice I get depressed by day 3. So it's just this part of, I don't know what it is. It's very spoiled of me, I guess. But I hate routine very, very much. So I like to sort of cheat on my process, you know, like I'll be working at my desk and then I'll like cheat on my desktop with my laptop and I'll write somewhere else. But I don't write every day. I write when I have something to say. And lately my ideas have gotten bigger. I'll write when I have a book to say, and then I'll write obsessively. Uh-huh. And I'm not saying this is something anyone should emulate, but I've had long periods of time where I would get up on my quote unquote writing days, and I would get up at 7 and I'd start and I'd end at, you know, 7 in the morning, and I end at, you know, 10 or 11 at night. Mm-hmm. And that's, I know that sounds horrible because it is horrible. That's a horrible way to be. I don't think anyone should do what I do. I think.
But wasn't it also delicious and good?
Yeah. it was like being on a bender, but for, let's say, for a year. You know, like a year's bender. That's how I wrote my memoir, because I was like, I don't want to write this really hard book for 10 years. I won't be able to, you know. I was like, luckily I had a deadline. I was able to, and I was like, for me to make this really, really, really impossible deadline, I have to have this ridiculous life for a little while. I think with shorter work, I'll just kind of get obsessed with a short story for a little while, and I'll just think about it all the time, and you know, I fall asleep imagining it, and it's just this world I want to be in for a while. And then once it's done, you know, and I send it off and it's published, and it, you know, luckily, hopefully published, then I can sort of let that go. And that's a part of something that I needed to work out, and then it's done, you know. So I almost have this amnesia after each time where I feel like, well, I wrote that story and I'll never write a story again, because I don't even know what happened. I know I worked, you know, and I know I worked in a very deliberate and technical way, but I don't have a memory of it. It's strange, you know?
Wow,
so when I look back, sometimes like I'll look back on an old draft, it'll just be in a weird place, and I'll open it for the heck of it. I'm like, I have no recollection of writing any of this stuff. This is so foreign to me.
Isn't that funny? This whole
document, it's like someone else wrote it, but I know it was me, you know, like this weird, like wiping clean of the hard drive. And then it creates a issue the next time I write any project, whether it's long or short, because I'm like, I don't know how to do this. It's almost like I'm reinventing the process every single time. But again, I think that's part of that earlier issue that I really hate doing the same thing twice. You're making something out of what was nothing, and it's a part of you, and you have to let it go and let it live in the world, right?
Yeah.
And what happens in the world, you have no control over. People can hate it. I've gotten angry emails from people, and people saying, you know, oh, this is stupid. And
no way. Oh my gosh.
You know, but not usually. It's very nice, but you know, or some weird review on Goodreads or whatever. So I think there's this sort of, you need to keep this a little bit of distance from the situation, or it can eat you up. But I overall, I feel incredibly lucky to do this. It's not everyone, you know, I've been in situations where I had to just make a living all the time, and I couldn't do it. So time is the enemy. Time is the thing that gets between people and their, and their ability to write their books, I think, you know.
You worked on Save Me, Stranger, and then you were working on the other book, but on Tell Me Everything. But when you were writing those new stories, say, or even lately, has there been anything that was sparked by something very specific from Save Me, Stranger that you're working on now or that you're going to, you think you might pick up in the future?
In a weird way. I wrote about a lot of different places that I'd lived or had been to or had researched, like who can go to Siberia. Now nobody can go to Siberia. But there are things, aspects of myself and my heritage and my family history that I, not just like mine, but like ancestrally, that I didn't write about. And I was like, well, why haven't I written about this? This is really, why have I never written about these aspects of my ancestry? And because I descend from some really interesting people. I thought about it, and I've been, since my memoir, I've been blending fiction and nonfiction a little bit more. I've been trying to find that edge between. And nonfiction kind of opens up this whole realm. Whereas with fiction, you're limited to whatever's in your imagination. But nonfiction, you have the whole world, right?
Yeah.
You can draw from so much. Yeah, but, you know, I'm just one person and actually kind of boring. So if I look at the rest of the world, then the scope opens. So I am trying on this idea. I'm not going to get too specific about it. But that sort of goes a little bit deeper into history. I'm thinking about writing some historical fiction, which I've never done before. Mm-hmm. So that's on brand for me, doing something I have no idea what to do.
Oh, that's so good.
That's my MO.
That's so good.
Yeah. And also maybe a mystery too. And I have no idea how to do that either. So, it's my next, migraine.
Oh my gosh.
Some cluster migraines to come.
Something tells me you're going to find your way through just fine.
Thank you.
What do you want people to think or understand just from reading Save Me, Stranger? One thing out of many.
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, there are two things that come to mind. The first is, even though it's a short story collection, I want people to have an almost novelistic experience reading it. That's what I want, you know? Yeah. I'm hoping that by the end, they have that kind of satisfaction when you've completely explored a novelistic idea, except this is a different idea. This is more a thematic idea. This is more, through all these different voices and different lives. But I want them to have that feeling of like coming into the space of the theme. And to that end, I hope that there's more a feeling of being connected to people, to strangers, to the world outside their immediate sphere, perhaps by empathizing with someone in Alaska that they never, a euthanizer in Alaska who's, 65 years old or whatever, like that, maybe that's not them, right? But they think, oh, well, that's kind of how I would be too. And maybe, who knows, maybe that kind of empathy might influence someone in their life and make them more willing to reach out a hand, because I think we all need a little help sometimes. So to be more empathetic toward each other and be more willing to be in community, especially in a time like now, so divisive, I do think we need to come together.
Erica Krause, thank you so much for your time. I'm so happy
thank
to get
you.
To talk to you.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Erica Krause is the author of the new story collection, Save Me, Stranger. It's published by Flatiron Books. This has been Book Public from Texas Public Radio. Jacob Rosati composed our theme music. Dan Katz is Texas Public Radio's news director. I'm Yvette Benavides.